The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Blasting into the future, it's Football Weekly. Today, first games of 2011 reviewed. All tied in Chelsea Villa, like Paige from Max Mosley's Diary, as Chelsea blow it again and slump out of the top four. Meanwhile, Man United stay top while West Ham blast out of bottom. Sounds painful. We round up the latest from the Premier League and look forward to the midweek round of games, especially Man City's visit to Arsenal. We check out the Blackburn nightclub scene ahead of Ronaldinho's 100% certain to happen move to Rovers. We get the rest of the transfer talk, hear the latest from the Championship, including why Captain Blade staged a sit-in for the Deepdale Duck, and hear from Sid in Madrid. All of that, plus other stuff too, in today's first of 2011 Football Weekly. Barry Glendening,
hello.
Happy New Year.
Many happy returns.
And to you too, John Ashton. That is a happy return. Nice to see you, John.
Good to be back.
Yes, good.
You know, after my loan spell.
Yeah, indeed. What, at Five Live?
Yeah, you know, well, I wasn't getting the first team action here and
no.
Need to keep myself sharp. And
all right.
Hopefully now I'm back in the gaffer's thoughts.
After they fired a producer, we recalled you in spite.
Yeah. Mm. That'd be nice if that had actually happened.
Yeah. I'm going to move on, though, to Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, Raphael. You're looking glamorous and European. Lovely. New Year's Day action, it says here, Barry. How about that Chelsea Villa game at the Bridge? Bridge of Sighs, Barry.
Yeah, it was a great game for the last 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a bit like a Rolling Stones concert in that. You know, where Jagger famously these days, he only sort of gets into his groove for the last 10 minutes and that's what people remember.
Right.
Otherwise, it was fairly scrappy and not that entertaining. But Villa went ahead, Chelsea equalised, they went ahead, thought they had it won, and then some awful marking allowed
Kieran Clarke
to score a late equaliser for Villa.
Yeah. It's always dangerous to score that late goal, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in much the same way as scoring before half time is great. Scoring just right near the end to go ahead is not good ever.
Mm. Indeed. But there was nice scenes when Terry did a lovely finish to put Chelsea ahead, and they all ran together as one down to Ancelotti and gave him a big hug. Much as they did once with Scolari just before he...
2 weeks before he was fired,
And then, but within minutes, they were at each other's throats again over who had failed to pick up Kieran Clarke. The answer was all of them failed to pick him up. How is that possible, Raphael Honigstein?
I think you can't read too much into that specific goal because Villa were throwing 10 men forward and these things happened. What was more disconcerting, I think, and I was at the game, was the amount of frustration that was felt all around Stamford Bridge with the way that Chelsea played, because they were really, really poor. There was a sense that this is not going right, and I think it poses some very interesting questions of what Abramovich wants to do with this team and this club, because it's crying out for investment, but of course his strategy has been to cut down on spending. So,
do you think there's any chance of some investment over January?
I think there's a big chance. The question is, will he... You know, how far will he go? Because the players that Chelsea need, or the caliber that players that would really help Chelsea, are quite expensive. To sign somebody from the Premier League for lesser money, or to try and bring in more youth, would probably not really help it, not in the short term. So he's got a real decision to make. In the past, we've seen with Mourinho at a similar crossroads 4 years ago, when he asked for a big defender in the January transfer market, Abramovich said no. And their relationship collapsed and never recovered.
I'm seeing that Chelsea want Dortmund Serbian centre-back Nevan Subotic. You know a bit more about him, perhaps. And Gary Cahill of Bolton.
It's the first time I hear them linked with Subotic. He's been pretty good for Dortmund. Him with Mats Hummels are really outstanding centre-back pairing. I mean, Dortmund would be absolutely mad now to sell him, of course, because they're heading for the first title in 9 years. They're getting into the Champions League next year. You don't sell your best centre-back. I think Cahill might be too expensive again, because Abramovich seems to have made his mind up that he's not going to invest all this money anymore. And I think at £20 million, which is the price that's been quoted by Bolton, it's probably not worth it.
Could it be a false economy, though, if they end up missing out on the Champions League?
Well, that is the question. I mean, if Ancelotti can convince Abramovich that he needs the money to get into the Champions League, then perhaps Abramovich will relent.
Crazy,
but it's a difficult pitch to make from Ancelotti's point of view, because from what I know, he's been so far been saying to Abramovich, and even before the season, I can work with these players. This is a good squad. And he had that line that, you know, the squad is good enough. Now to change his tune and say we need desperate need new defenders and perhaps a striker as well is difficult politically, I think, for him.
All right. Well, Chelsea next up will be dealing with Wolves. Bottom of the table, Wolves. That's their midweek fixture. Top of the table, meantime, are Man United, who played at West Brom in the weekend. If Odin Wiggy had scored that penalty, if Gary Neville had been given the red card he so richly deserved.
That was another shocking performance by Chris Foy, who's the referee who's having a nightmare season this season. And I don't think he should be allowed referee in the Premier League anymore. He's made so many bad mistakes. Like, he hasn't sent a player off in his last 29 Premier League games, which flies in the face of the average. And plus, you can point to two, three, maybe four separate incidents where he should have sent players off and didn't. Gary Neville being the most recent. He didn't send off Tom Huddleston for a stamp on Johan Elmander despite seeing the stamp. He failed to send off Branislav Ivanovic for Chelsea against Sunderland despite a professional foul on Asamoah Gyan.
He's looking to get an MBE. I would make an excuse for him, for Chris Foy, to the extent that it was difficult to see because Gary Neville was so slow he couldn't even foul the player properly because he didn't really make contact with neither the ball nor the player.
I mean, obviously,
it was a penalty, but he didn't really get him. You know, he was kind of so far behind, he didn't really catch up with him.
All right. But anyway, despite all these things, Man United roll on, of course, now with added goals from Wayne Rooney, although Scott Carson looked less than invincible there in the West Brom goal. And next up, Man United face Stoke at Old Trafford. Any chance of an upset there? Hey, John?
You wouldn't have thought so, given...
Wouldn't you?
Well, given the fact that United aren't playing particularly well and yet still won 9 out of 10 games at home, and the fact that Stoke have been a bit scratchy and unconvincing on the
road.
But
this has been the period for surprise away wins, isn't it? Fulham at Stoke, Wolves at Liverpool. I'm just wondering if the Potters couldn't, you know...
Stoke have lost their last 6 against United.
Well, all right.
And last beat them in the Premier League in 1984. Well, the league.
That's your opinion, Barry. I'm just saying that.
No, they're the facts.
Right, yeah. Good. I'm going to finish off part one, if I may, with a word or two about Arsenal. They had a big win at Birmingham. It's tricky ground for them. They've seen their title challenge come unstuck there before now. It's also a ground where the home side never loses to the big sides, but they lost this time in major fashion. And Arsenal thus go into their midweek clash with Man City, who are currently sharing the lead with Man United, in fine form.
They've looked pretty irresistible going forward, and I think it's all down to Van Persie, who makes everybody else look better. His movement is so good, and he's so good on the ball. He can play in the people who come deep and come from midfield. That is a completely different dimension to their game. He himself is still a bit short of match fitness.
I was wondering where you were going there.
And perhaps hasn't scored the goals that he should have.
Right.
Certainly against Birmingham, he missed a great chance in rather meek fashion. But I think he's really transformed this team. And going forward, they look absolutely irresistible.
Birmingham now in the bottom three. And they'll probably be without Lee Boyer for how many games? 3, 6, 12?
I'd say at least 3. He's stamped on Bakary Sagna. And then in a separate incident, which was probably worse, but didn't
raked
look as bad,
studs.
Raked his studs down the back of his Achilles, which, if you allow me to do that to you, you could see just how painful it is.
Let me know how painful it is, Barry. You're not wearing studs, of course, but...
And you're not wearing your Achilles.
No.
So he'll almost certainly get a 3-game ban, and possibly because he's Lee Boyer and got a bad reputation, he might get a 5, possibly 6...
He's the most booked player in Premier League history.
Is he?
Apparently.
Well, he didn't get booked for either of those, I think. So.
No, he didn't. So there you go. How much more booked would he be had he...
Two
more bookings. Yeah. Right, okay.
There was news this morning that from Mancini's press conference, Balotelli and David Silva will both miss the game against Arsenal, which is good news for the Gunners.
Well, David Silva, after he went off against Blackpool, it all broke down for City, and Mancini shouting himself hoarse on the sidelines there. So, yes, David Silva, a key component of that City attack. Balotelli presumably would have been playing the understudy role to fellow Stroppy Latin.
What did he do on the sidelines?
Shouting himself hoarse. He shouted so much that he became
shouting.
Right. What did you have? Shafting a horse on the sideline?
Sounded like shattered to me.
Really?
Yeah.
He may have done that as well. I don't know. It was a tense afternoon.
Sounds worse to me.
Mm. All right, then. Like something out of, what was that, a film about the Roman Emperor? Caligula, that's the one.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
Excellent. On the subject of Caligula, actually,
yes.
James Dart and his lovely wife gave birth to their first daughter today.
Right.
Her name is Evie Rose.
Right, and?
I just thought I'd put that out there. Welcome,
but you
welcome
said
Evie
on the
Rose.
Subject of Caligula.
Oh, that put me in mind of sex, and sex put me in mind of Darty and his wife having a baby.
Right, okay. So,
everyone as well.
Interesting that the thought of sex puts you in mind of Darty.
I thought he might call her Adrienne, Jackpot 9 Darty.
Well, you see, now this is a darts reference.
Well, that was Adrian Lewis won the darts last night, and Darty's a big darts fan.
That's great. Yeah, he's called James Dart. Yeah. Good. Excellent.
Brilliant game on Wednesday.
Arsenal-Man City. Mm. Right.
Really looking forward to it.
Do you think it might be one of those games that we all really, really look forward to and then it turns out to suck?
No.
Well, hopefully you're right.
Would you call it for us, Rafa?
No.
All right. Do you know that City have only scored 5 goals in their last 13 Premier League visits to Arsenal and none in their last 3? They've won none of their last 27 away games against Arsenal in all competitions. Crikey. But they're a form team right now, aren't they? City and Spurs, the only teams to get 4 points over Christmas. And, of course, Edin Dzeko, the man you said no way would be arriving in January. Way, Rafa, way. That's now going to happen by Sunday, is that right?
It will happen, and it happened because Steve McLaren managed to crash out against second division Energie Cottbus just before Christmas, at which point Wolfsburg changed their mind and said, well, we're not getting rid of McLaren, but we have to change the team completely.
Oh.
And one way to do it is to sell Dzeko and reinvest the money into 3 or 4 new players. So
all right.
Everything changed because of that.
Dzeko has become this kind of talismanic name bandied around the transfer market. But how effective will he actually be for City, do you think?
I think in the long run, he'll be wonderful. I mean, he'll score goals. I looked up his figures yesterday. He scored 66 goals in 111 games at Wolfsburg and 28 assists. So that's pretty good. For a side who, yes, won the title, but have never been anywhere near the top before in the 3 years that he's been there. And I tend to think that he's also being seen increasingly as a long-term solution, perhaps with a view of getting rid of or letting Tevez go. And I'm pretty sure that there are still one or two doubts still about Balotelli's long-term viability. So even if you could say right now he's not really going to fit into the system straight away, I think come next season he'll be the main striker there.
All right, is he 26?
He's 25.
He's 25. There you go.
It does pose a slightly interesting tactical dilemma, doesn't it, for Mancini? Because you've got Tevez buzzing around, playing all over the front line, really, from that central position. And then if you replace him with a more static striker, what does that do for Tevez's role? And what does that do for the way City play?
Yeah, I mean, Dzeko's been happiest when he played just off a more ordinary, or shall we say, straightforward centre-forward, Grafic. That's his been his best position. That's been also a bone of contention with McLaren, because McLaren changed it to a 4-2-3-1 system. Dzeko is the sole striker. Dzeko didn't enjoy it at all, said we have to change it back, which he did, to a 4-4-2 with a diamond. Mancini will have to do something to get them all in, but again, I think the thinking there is that Balotelli's been in and out of the team. Tevez, you don't know where he's going to be. So Dzeko, especially with the view, I think, of the financial fair play regulations, where they have to City's strategy seems to be to do all the spending right now and then live off the proceeds of selling all these surplus players for the next 3 or 4 years when they can't buy players anymore. It makes sense to get him in now.
Excellent. There you go. Man City visiting Arsenal this midweek. We are going to conclude part one there. Coming up very shortly, it's Sid Lowe.
Hello.
Hi, Sid. So glad you could join us. Those Spanish,
I bet you are, yeah.
Those Spanish teams have been in action again, even though they weren't supposed to be.
They sort of weren't supposed to be. No, the Spanish Football Players Union, the AFE, and basically tried to prevent the games going ahead at the start of the new year. And there's two reasons for this. And the legal reason was that according to the agreement between the Players Union and the league, the 2nd of January wasn't going to be an official players' day. They were supposed to have a certain number of days over Christmas, which they weren't being given on the basis of coming back as early as the 2nd of January. And so they were trying to prevent it happening. It was also an attempt to try and create pressure for the fact there are a number of players who've gone unpaid at a number of clubs in Spain, most notably Real Betis. So they were saying that they wouldn't go, they wouldn't go and they wouldn't play and they would go on strike. This actually ended up in Spain's High Court. And the response from the Spanish High Court, I thought, was absolutely brilliant. This is classic. They said, we haven't got the authority to make this decision. You've brought this to the wrong court. And the Spanish phrase was, we declare ourselves incompetent. And I thought, yeah, you and everyone else.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So they went ahead and played. Of course, in other striking news, Royston Drenthe has now had to leave Hercules with a police escort after his strike. Well, what's the story with that?
Well, Drenthe is complaining that he hasn't been paid, that he's only had one of his monthly payments so far. He should have had six by the time he's, for the amount of time he's played at Hercules so far. I think for Drenthe, this is pretty much the final straw. Bear in mind that Hercules are a club who've had no hot water running at their training ground. They were on a 14-hour coach journey to play. I think it was up in Galicia. A lot of the players have gone without payment. And Drenthe basically said, you know what, I've had enough. I'm not coming back. So over Christmas, he was in Rotterdam back at home, and he said, I'm not coming back, I'm not doing it. And then in the end, it was cranked up quite a bit because some of his teammates criticised him. I think he probably expected a certain degree of solidarity. It didn't happen. His manager criticised him. The club criticised him. And the fans obviously weren't very happy about this. There was painting on the outside of the walls of his house, calling him all sorts of names. He finally arrived in Alicante last night, needed a police escort from the airport to go home. And I think probably won't be at Hercules for very much longer, which is a real pity because he'd finally found his feet. He was a real hero at Hercules. He was starting to become a big player again. And a player that people really, really liked. I think they now really, really hate him. Mm. And I think that the fundamental facts have been missed in this, the fans getting on at him. He hasn't been paid. You know, that's the bottom line in all this. And it was quite amusing to see him arrive at the airport, people shouting mercenary at him. You think, well, surely a mercenary is someone who gets paid.
Well, indeed. Listen, in other transfer news, there's been all sorts of who and indeed har about the notion of Kaká moving off to Old Trafford. Kaká actually making his return this Monday.
Last night, yeah, I was there at the Colosseum to see him return against Getafe. Came on for about, I think I'm right in saying, 16 or 17 minutes, and looked reasonably sharp. Played reasonably well. He was interesting after the game in terms of the things he said. And one of the questions I asked him was about the extent to which he ever felt that he might not come back at all. And he said that he had started to have doubts about whether this would be a kind of a definitive blow to his career. He wasn't getting overexcited in the sense that he was saying, you know, he's got to take this kind of carefully and not start thinking, right, I'm back, everything's perfect. And Mourinho was saying the same thing. But it's very, very important that he's back. And I think, in a word, I should probably sum up those stories about him going to Manchester United. Which word shall I use? Rubbish, perhaps?
Rubbish. There you go. Kaká, says producer Ben.
Yes.
Other transfer rumours, Sid? Anything else we should know about vis-a-vis clubs or managers in the Liga?
Well, you've got basically more than anything else, you've got Malaga trying to build themselves an entirely new team now. Of course, this is a club that were bought out by Qatari owners in the summer. They said they were going to challenge Real Madrid and Barcelona within 2 or 3 years. They actually didn't spend that much money in kind of international football terms. I think it was around about 16 or 17 million in the summer. But in Spanish terms, that's pretty high. Because Spanish football's got a really pretty serious financial crisis beyond the big two. And now they've decided, well, that wasn't working, it's all gone wrong. But I think I'm right in saying they've already signed five players, and I think there will be more. And here's a slightly left-field one that's worth keeping an eye on. Malaga to sign Adebayor.
Oh, really? Because Real Madrid have been mentioned in connection with Emmanuel, but yeah.
Well, that's the battle at the moment, and Jose Mourinho is really, really determined to get a number nine. The club has told him they won't buy him a striker. At some stage, something's going to have to give one way or the other. Either Mourinho's going to have to give up on the pressure that he's currently applying on the club, or the club will have to buy a manager. It's interesting, though, because Real Madrid have been much more public than in the past about saying, no, we're not going to bring anyone in. No, we're not going to let anyone go, although it does look like Mohamedou Diarra will go to Malaga. And so I think if they were to back down now, it would be so public so public the back down that it kind of puts him in a slightly difficult position in terms of the internal politics. But the injury to Gonzalo Higuain, who now looks like, well, according to Mourinho at least, is going to be out for 6 months, certainly does mean that the need for another striker is fairly pressing. The actual centre forwards, Real Madrid only really have one now, and that's Karim Benzema.
There's a lot of transfer rumours at the moment. Barry, you were probably doing a rumour mill this morning, were you? Or was it you, John?
It was neither of us.
Neither of you. No.
Yeah.
How about Beckham to Spurs?
Well, that's quite an interesting one because apparently there are 14 different clubs after Beckham's signature for a loan period. Spurs appear to be the front runners because Beckham has told
Jamie
Redknapp, son of Ari, that he would like to play for Spurs. But now a lot of people in the States, particularly LA Galaxy fans and MLS officials, are turning on Beckham, saying, wouldn't you be more in line to focus on playing for the club you're contracted to as opposed to going off elsewhere and getting injured again?
Digger makes the point today that the owner of the LA Galaxy is actually already, to an extent, in bed with Spurs. Philip Andrews.
Right. Well, the thing is, if Beckham does go, it will only be for 2.5 months.
Right.
So, I mean, it's difficult to know how much, whether he'd be any use to them, whether he could have an impact. It's sort of, I don't know. I think he's past his prime, but.
He's 36. His last loan period at Milan saw him pick up an injury which kept him out for months now.
Yeah, so. In a way, he'll be the perfect fit for Spurs because when it comes to crashing out at the last 16 round, there's no other expert than him. I mean, he's done it so well over the last few years, and he could really help them achieve that against Milan.
What about Luis Suarez? Top Uruguayan
handball merchant.
Handball merchant, yeah.
It's a good striker, but do they need another striker, Spurs? I'm not entirely convinced.
No,
I think that what they've got now seems to be working really well.
All right, how about Ronaldinho to Blackburn? It's so going to happen, isn't it?
No. They've made a £6.2 million offer to Milan.
Yeah.
And offered Ronaldinho £20 million. Over the course of 3 years.
Yeah.
Today, they're claiming this.
But it's bizarre. Yesterday, the story initially came out from sort of semi-official Blackburn sources on their Facebook page, I believe. And then they said, no, there's no truth in it. But today, Ms. Desai, the kind of Venky kind of...
The chicken lady.
Yeah, she's saying, yeah, absolutely. She's detailing the terms of the offer they're making, which is a fat one indeed. And she goes on to correct our impression that she'd never watched a football match. She says, I'm not watching a stadium, but I have been watching the World Cup in India. And she adds, rather relevantly, I've watched hundreds of cricket matches, but not live. It's all on TV. To say I don't have any knowledge would be wrong. I am a good listener. So,
in a sense, it doesn't matter how much football they watch. It's whether you understand how to run a club. And
right.
They've certainly not given the impression they have. They do seem to be winging it,
yes,
as it were.
Yeah, well, mixed messages.
A lot of people have scoffed at the notion of Ronaldinho pitching up at Blackburn, but surely they could afford to pay him more than Gremio can.
I think scoffing would be an appropriate word, of course, in Ronaldinho's case. I think
and a lot of it would hinge, obviously, on Blackburn nightlife, which I am unfamiliar with. But
Liquid Envy, the award-winning Liquid Envy nightclub in Blackburn, an amazing clubbing experience. You're not familiar with Liquid Envy?
I'm sure there's a Liquid Envy in Crawley as well. I think it might be a chain.
Is there?
Sadly, yeah.
Right.
So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Right. Liquid Envy, moist jazzy keks. This is extraordinary.
Jazzy keks.
Jazzy keks, yeah.
You're winding us up, are you?
No, apparently that is the... Let me just check. Producer Ben, are you winding us up? This is Producer Ben's list of nightclub establishments in Blackburn. He assures us they are genuine. They include Liquid Envy, Moist, Jazzy Keks, and the Dog Inn. Yeah. As well as the less exotically named Marigold's Bar and Music.
Are you sure it wasn't just dogging, as in a nocturnal pursuit in Blackburn?
My mistake, and Jazzy Keks is a natural consequence there.
And then,
But Blackburn is obviously a vastly underrated centre.
Have you ever been in Blackburn?
Have I ever been in Blackburn? Yeah. I've been to Blackburn, yes.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, but, you know, That was then. Maybe this is now. I'm not sure. I have to say, you know, we may joke about it, but I have to say nightlife is a major, major factor. Ronaldinho's been in Milan. He wants to go back to Brazil. He may be tempted by this amount of money, but I think he was very clear on the fact that he wanted to play for some Brazilian side where he could go and lounge around on the beach and stay out until dawn and all that kind of thing, and generally make like other greats of the Brazilian game, like Ronaldo, who... you know,
he sounds just like the sort of committed pro who really wants to prove himself at a new place.
It is an extraordinary idea. So I think he wouldn't is probably our summary on that one.
If even if it doesn't happen, at least we'll be able to chalk it down on the great list of transfers that never happened, such as
along with
Maradona to Sheffield United, and one that I was reading about.
But that might have happened, though.
That very nearly happened.
And
Johan Cruyff to Leicester in the early 80s, which I was reading about last week.
Really?
After he'd finished in the United States, fancied coming back to Europe and winning his place back in the 82 World Cup squad, and was tempted by, at the time, bottom of the First Division Leicester. In the end, went back to Spain and didn't do particularly well. I've nabbed all that from the, I think it's the In Bed with Maradona blog, so I ought to credit them.
Right. Okay. That.
But worth reading. Interesting.
Very interesting, very interesting. As will be part three, which is coming up ever so shortly, with John's big Box O Championship fun and other stuff too. Part three, apologies, because the computer saying no scenario has involved the deletion of all your posts. There's only one left, actually. Cable 1973 says, what do people think of petty Imperial Lord Fergu, because his son has been sacked, rightly so if you look at the table, has pulled all his loan players out of Preston, except Matthew James, because he legally can't?
Well, Richard Williams, in his column today of this parish, made the point that Ferg was entitled to do so because technically they're young players, you loan them to a manager who and you want them moulded in a certain way. So he was entitled, when the manager he had loaned the players to got sacked, that the players be brought back to Old Trafford. And while that's probably a fair point, I don't doubt for a second his reasons for doing so were spiteful, vindictive and petty. But entirely predictable. Are you even remotely surprised he'd do such a thing? I think it reflects badly on him, and it makes his son look like a real, you know, little daddy's boy who can't look after himself.
Mm. His son already looks like Michael McIntyre, a bit, in my opinion, so, yeah.
He also made his other son look quite bad by talking about agents in a very disparaging way.
Sort of King Lear-esque Twilight scenario on the cards for Lord Ferg, then. How about, though, that Preston North End? They clash with Crystal Palace. Two clubs had just got rid of managers. George Burley, sadly, shown the exit. They're at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, they met yesterday. It was 23rd against 24th in the Championship, so the classic relegation 6-pointer. And Palace ran out 1-0 winners. Much of the interest, despite the importance of the game on the field, was off the field, where parking spaces had been reserved for Steve Coppell and Chris Houghton.
Oh.
Houghton, who didn't actually turn up to the game, and Coppell, who did. Although the Palace chairman has been at pains to play that down, saying that Coppell lives locally and that he's been to a few games this season, so it's nothing unusual, and that Houghton had been to the game at the weekend, but also went to QPR as well, and that sort of thing. But the fans, and they've, indeed the board as well, would be quite keen to see Coppell come back for a fifth spell as manager. They've got a bit of a persuading job to do, though. I mean, he is the guy who retired from football management after a few games with Bristol City, saying he just couldn't be bothered with it anymore, couldn't really take it anymore. And they are in a dire situation at the bottom of the table. It'd be interesting to see if they can sell that to him.
Mm. At the top of the Championship, meanwhile, though, hey, John, QPR are still in first place. They got held by Bristol City. Big game coming up... this evening, is it? Yeah, because behind QPR you've got Swansea now and Norwich sharing second place, but that's largely because, Leeds are about to play Cardiff.
Leeds play Cardiff tonight, yeah. Leeds are unbeaten in sort of 12 games or something.
And Cardiff aren't.
Tremendous run, and Cardiff have won
They've lost five of the last seven.
Lost five
Dave
of the last
Jones
seven.
Is under pressure.
Well, there was reports in South Wales that they'd had an emergency board meeting to discuss his future over the weekend, which Jones has come out and said it's entirely hogwash, and it wasn't true. But he's still under a lot of pressure down there. They have got players like Bellamy and have spent money in the past, and it's a squad that really needs to be challenging for the top two for him to justify his position. And at the moment, they're drifting off that top two. I mean, it's there for the taking. I still think, despite this little blip, this little wobble, that QPR are destined for the title. But second place is entirely up for grabs. And Cardiff are the team that really should be the ones that grab it. At the moment, though, it's looking a little unlikely.
How is Sven's Leicester doing?
The Svenolution at the Walker Stadium, it's gathering pace. Yeah, I mean, this Championship is a division where managers are particularly vulnerable because each team, well, 20 teams out of the 24 perhaps come into the season in August thinking and being correct in their thinking that they've got a chance of making the playoffs and getting promotion, particularly after Blackpool's success last year. And so when those expectations aren't being met, whether they're realistic or not, the managers do come under pressure. And it doesn't help, in a sense, when a team like Leicester sacks a manager early. Paulo Sousa, who was having a bit of a nightmare time of it, brings in Sven, and all of a sudden they've shot up the table and into the top half. And, you know, why would Cardiff and Burnley and co. not be thinking, well, Leicester have done it, why can't we do it?
Yeah, all right. In the meantime, your Sheffield United came from 2-2 at home to the South Yorkshire rivals Doncaster for a 2-2 draw, the second half of which was delayed when the home team's mascot, Captain Blade, staged a sit-in protest at half-time. John, can you explain this?
Yes, in fact, the second half wasn't delayed. Oh. I think it was a joke from the PA announcer that went slightly awry. Oh. Captain Blade, in fact, packed away
what is Captain Blade?
Captain Blade is the pirate mascot of Sheffield United. Of course, our famous links with the coast being in Sheffield. He carries a pair of scimitars.
Is he about compasses. 8 foot tall and made of foam rubber and stuff or not?
Yeah, sort of thing. Yeah, they're on the crest it's scimitars, so he has to really have scimitars as well.
Right.
Anyway, over the weekend, the Deepdale Duck was, I believe he was arrested, but he was certainly dragged from the ground after
the stewards escorted him from the pitch.
After distracting Derby players, I think it was, at Deepdale. And it's something that he has previous for. Hmm. He's been in trouble with the past, the stewards, for winding up opposition fans and players, in fact.
The Deepdale Duck, what kind of thing does he do?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it might just be sort of dancing inappropriately or in inappropriate times.
Okay.
Which begs the question, why have they not got rid of him? Because, I mean, the only reason I can think of is he actually is a duck. There isn't a person inside a foam suit. He's the only one. So they can't. There's no guy inside they could get rid of because they.
He genuinely is a Deepdale Duck.
I think. Yeah. Well, there's no other explanation.
Maybe his suit has magical powers, though. Right. Even if you're the most mild-mannered, placid.
Like the mask. You remember that film?
Once you put it on, the Deepdale Duck outfit.
All right.
You turn into this monster.
Maybe he's like a blind lawyer by day, but then by Saturday afternoon he puts on a Deepdale Duck. And works by the power of radar. I'm just, you know, running with this one a little bit.
Don't be ridiculous.
All right, then. How about... why do they got a duck, anyway, at Preston?
I think it's just because it's alliterative.
Is that the only one applied?
Because if it looks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, and it quacks like a duck, then it must be a duck.
That might be one for... I don't actually know. It might be one for Preston fans, if there are any that listen to tweet in or whatever and tell us.
Quacking,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And the protest was the Captain Blade's protest. He sat down in the
centre circle. Oh, we were still talking about that. I forgot.
Yeah, I mean, to explain, he was basically saying... He held up a placard saying, "Free the Deepdale One."
Right.
Or the Preston
One.
Which is a Coronation Street reference as well. So it's all, you know, all very northern.
Right. Okay, Championship as entertaining as ever then. Excellent stuff. In the meantime, up in the lower reaches of the Premier League, all sorts of excitement. There are 8 teams separated by 4 points. The bottom three now reading Fulham, Birmingham and Wolves. And West Ham rocketing out of the relegation zone with their victory at the weekend over Wolves themselves. So they're unbeaten now in 4. Very, very exciting. West Brom have lost their last 4. Hmm. He said, listening, no response from anyone at all. West Brom, should they be worried?
Well, they should, because Fulham's last 4 Premier League home wins have come against teams whose name begins with W.
Right.
And Fulham play West Brom at home tonight.
Interesting. Yep.
If, Barry, the stats are the last reserve of somebody with nothing to say, as you pointed out to me earlier.
No, I didn't say that. I said there's a second last reserve. I said betting odds are the last reserve of someone with nothing to say.
Edging towards Helms Deep there, I would say.
Right. Okay, good. What about Liverpool, though? They had a victory against Bolton. They're up in, is it ninth, tenth now?
They're ninth, six points off the drop.
And yet, rumours continue to fly that Roy Hodgson is not long for the Anfield bench. A lot of people connecting this with the vast numbers of empty seats at their New Year's Day game against Bolton and his decision to rest Steven Gerrard. The question being, if Raul Morelos had not got injured, forcing Roy to put Gerrard on, would this game have turned out entirely differently? Because it certainly was heading that way.
I think that's a little bit unfair on him, because it was obviously done on medical advice that Gerrard wasn't quite fully fit to start the game.
Well, he looked all right when he came on.
Yeah, when he came on, because he played 45 minutes. And I think he himself yesterday said at the press conference that he unfortunately has to play them all the time, Torres and Gerrard, but they're not quite ready to play all the time, and there will be a point again where he'll have to rest them a little bit. And it's only right, because this is a long season. And you'd think if you are going to rest your captain, a home game to Bolton might not be the worst game in the world to do it against.
When you just lost at home to Wolves, though, you might.
But yeah, but you still got, I don't know, 20 more games a season. So if he picks up a nasty thigh injury because your medical team have told you he's a little bit touch and go, you rest him.
It's a fair case you make there, Raphael. There's been a lot of talk connecting a Liverpool manager's job with various figures in Germany.
Yeah, Ralf Rangnick, the Hoffenheim manager, left his post just after New Year's, and a lot of people sort of have jumped the gun a little bit on this, thinking that because he resigned, he would only have resigned because he's got somebody else lined up. And of course, Liverpool are very much looking for a manager, and he would tick a lot of boxes in a way if the new owners would go for a sort of a radical solution and try to build a club more or less from scratch, the way that Wenger did, for example, at Arsenal, because he'd be the sort of manager. He is somebody who went to see Wenger a few years ago and really modelled his whole football on him and on Sacchi and Lobanovsky as well. And he speaks perfect English, so he would be, in theory, a good signing or a good appointment. But there are other, I would say, disadvantages that come with him, namely that he hasn't really done it at the top level at all. He had 1.5 good years at Schalke, which ultimately ended in acrimony with the board. And my personal view is that it might be a little bit too early for him to go all the way. I think he'd be better off himself and also the club concerned if you were to take over sort of a more ambitious club, maybe a Hamburg or Wolfsburg, who both probably will be having vacancies come the summer, rather than go straight to Liverpool, which will be a difficult job, I mean, for anyone. So he might not be the right person for
Jürgen Klopp, is it?
Jürgen Klopp, yeah. No. I mean, Klopp is a guy that really a lot of clubs would like, and he was also been linked with a German national team.
Oh, Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund. I mean, 14 wins out of 17 this season, so that's pretty good. They also play great football. They play it with the young team. So he's really worked wonders there, and certainly he's good enough, I think, to succeed at the very top. The problem is, of course, for Liverpool, that when we believe they did sound him out at the end of November, he was flying with Dortmund, and he was just about to renew his contract, which he has since, to 2014. And they're on course for the first title in 9 years. They definitely get to get into the Champions League. To jump ship now, or even in the summer, would be a big move. And I think Klopp is too wary of making that now. He'd be, again, in a long-term view, it'd be better for him to have now 3 or 4 years of sustained success at a club like Dortmund, who have all the infrastructure ready right now to be a giant in German football, rather than go to Liverpool.
Is there any point in Liverpool getting rid of Hodgson at this stage of the season? No one was expecting them to pull up any trees this season. They haven't. They're probably good enough not to get relegated. They may not challenge the top six either, but, you know, give him a chance, let him prove he can turn things around, and if he doesn't by the summer, then get rid, surely.
I don't know.
Parachuting in a panic choice, like, say, an unproven Bundesliga manager or something like
that. You have to see some progress, though, don't you? You've got to see. I mean, yeah.
Well, if he hasn't made progress by the end of May, then...
Isn't it too late, then?
Well, as long as they don't get relegated, it's not too late. And you'd think they'd have enough about them to avoid the drop. Surely there's three teams worse than them.
I think perhaps the problem is that the fans haven't written off this season. They haven't sort of nobody came into the season thinking it was going to be a write-off.
The other issue is, of course, if they, I know people laugh about the Europa League, but if they don't get into Europa League, it'll be even more difficult to attract signings in the summer because you'd have to recompensate them for not being involved in Europe at all, which the better players want to be. So you'd have to sell them. Not just a club who says, well, we've got to get back in the Champions League. We have to actually say, well, we're going to get back into Europe eventually. Here, take the million euros more and sit this year out with us and you won't be involved in Europe. So that, I think that is the problem. Financially, it might make more sense to do it now. But I agree with Barry. I mean, he should probably be given the end of the year. The thing is, though, from what I've been hearing, that they're obviously sounding out candidates now for the summer, so it seems to be that there has been some decision that he's not going to be a long-term solution.
Right, but the change would come in the summer. Didier Deschamps, another of the managers mentioned. I'm curious about Martin Jol, who you were saying about Ralf Rangnick resigning, and people assume this might be in connection with a vacancy elsewhere. We all thought Martin Jol might be something to do with Newcastle, the two things happening at the same time, but what's happened with him? He's just taking a sabbatical, is he, Martin Jol?
Yeah. Oh, he's waiting for a new office. I mean, I think he is somebody who's looking at the Hamburg job as well. For example, he's been successful there, pretty successful. But you have to be careful because the thing with managers is that they're so difficult to judge. I mean, you see players play and you can sort of say they're good or they're bad. With managers, you think they're brilliant. Then you hear the stories of what the players tell you, that he's not even there at training and that, you know, or the other way around. The most brilliant managers don't succeed because they don't get on with the owner, or they don't get on with the two, three players who call the shots in the training room. So it's very, very difficult. I mean, Martin Jol, because you bring it up, has a fantastic reputation, certainly in England. But you talk to some of the players that he's coached in Germany, and they've been very, I wouldn't say negative, but sort of really downplayed his involvement and his tactical and technical know-how very much.
Mm.
I think it's odd no one's linked to Ian Holloway with the Liverpool job. He strikes me as being exactly what they need. Someone whose proven track record of being able to get a group of fairly average players to play well above themselves, which to me seems to be exactly what Liverpool need.
I don't think
to
New England Sport Ventures see their future team as being a group of pretty ordinary players. Martin
O'Neill, that's what they are at the moment.
Well, at the moment, yeah.
And we've never really seen how Holloway can operate. Mm. With a budget, but
that is true.
I would imagine he would not be a popular choice among the wise men of the COP.
One interesting player that Liverpool have been linked with for the transfer period is Ageri Elia from Hamburg, who's a very, very good Dutch winger, probably an upgrade on Ryan Babel, very much an upgrade, I would say, who is also very much on for sale. And this ties in with the Dzeko deal, because there is a scenario that says that as soon as the millions from Abu Dhabi have landed on the Wolfsburg account, it will go straight, or a sizable sum of that will go straight back to Hamburg for Elia. But in the last couple of days, there have been reports in the Hamburg press that Liverpool are definitely interested. So it could well be a tussle between those two clubs in the next week or so.
All right, excellent. Well, much to keep our eyes on. Then over the next few days, we have another midweek round of action in the Premier League. We'll be rounding that up on Thursday in Football Weekly Very Extra. In the meantime, many thanks to Raphael Honigstein, to John Ashdown, and Barry of Glendenning, and producer Ben now back. And we'll be back, as I say, on Thursday. Thanks, listeners. Speak to you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.